Hi, I'm new to the club, the fan club. I've only known Alice in this century. And yet it made me an ardent member of the club. And I will continue on. Alice has really changed my life in very profound ways and changed my professional life in very profound ways. I'll tell you something about it. My presentation, I think, is a little bit more of a story and a little bit less academic than I would normally have put together. So I want to provide you with a study in contrasts. There is the storybook Alice in Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, and there is the real Alice, or Alice, Dr. Alice M. Horowitz. And I'm going to provide you first with some contrast indeed. Those of you who recall Alice in Wonderland may remember that when Alice followed the White Rabbit, she was plunged into a very different world and a series of incredibly confusing events. So in her adventures in Wonderland, she began almost immediately with a forgetfulness, a strange sense of confusion. She forgot all she knew. Her voice sounded hoarse and strange. Words did not come the same as they used to. Well, I found out by speaking with people who knew Alice in the previous century, as well as this new one, that Alice's work at NIH, Alice's work at HHS, Alice's current work at the University of Maryland does not at all involve sounding strange, forgetting words. There's a strength, there's a vision, there's a clarity of thought that has long been there in contrast. The lost and confused notion you could see again in Alice in Wonderland when Alice attended the famous tea party. "You should say what you mean," said the March Hare, went on. "I do," Alice hastily replied. At least I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know." "Not the same thing a bit," said the Hatter. Everyone else chimed in as well. "Really, now you ask me," said Alice, very much confused. "I don't think..." "Well, then you shouldn't talk," said the Hatter. Again, a study in contrast. I have never seen the Alice that I know confusing meaning with what she was saying. There is a clarity of thought, there's a clarity of presentation, there's a clarity of inquiry. I'll move on to just another when I have more to say about words. This, we're skipping from Alice in Wonderland to Through the Looking Glass. And of course, we all know the outcome of Humpty Dumpty. But if you recall Alice's encounter with Humpty Dumpty, this is the very beginning of their conversation. When Humpty Dumpty was talking and using very confusing words that Alice did not understand, and she finally asks, you know, "What do you mean by particular word?" And he gave a definition, and Alice said, no, that's not what that word means. And Humpty Dumpty was quick to correct her. "It means, when I use a word," Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, "it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. The question is," and you see Alice building in strength a little bit in Through the Looking Glass, not as timorous as she was in Alice in Wonderland, "the question is whether you can make words mean so many different things." "The question is," said Humpty Dumpty, "which is to be master? That's all." Alice was much too puzzled to say anything. Our Alice, needless to say, has not been too puzzled to say anything. She has criticized the field for using jargon. She has spoken out against the use of medical and scientific terms that are not part of the everyday lay language. She has talked about the unnecessary barrier of confusion that persists in medical and dental encounters indeed with all professional, health professionals, and bureaucrats, where we erect unnecessary barriers to the public who want to enter, who want to seek care, who want to join us in conversation. And very important conversation, access to information. And Alice has never been too puzzled to say anything. She truly comes to the fore. I'll just give one more example. I may have one or two more, sorry. meandering. If you recall this scene, this is going back to Alice in Wonderland when Alice meets the Cheshire Cat. She's terribly lost. She's lost sight of the rabbit. She doesn't know exactly where to go. And she asks the Cheshire Cat, please tell me which way to go. Of course, the cat, very reasonable and one of the more reasonable characters in the book. That depends a great deal on where you want to get to, said the cat. Well, I don't much care where, said Alice. Keep in mind she was horribly confused and very lost. Then it doesn't matter which way you go, said the cat. So long as I get somewhere, Alice added as an explanation. Oh, you're sure to do that, said the cat, if you only walk long enough. Now, there are times in our discussions when Alice was struck by a new idea, by a new vision, and she didn't know exactly where she wanted to get to. She didn't know exactly what the destination would look like. But unlike the storybook Alice, it did make a difference what direction. She knew the direction to take. She knew what to set up in advance of the journey, so that the journey itself would be a learning experience. And where we would arrive together in an ensemble was at a new understanding. So in that sense, Alice indeed, our Alice, always knew the direction and where she wanted to go. What I've learned from colleagues and speaking to people and friends who were with Alice for many more years than I had an opportunity to know, at NIH and at HHS, Alice was very attentive to literacy skills of U.S. adults, very attentive to what was being learned out of the educational agenda when the findings were first being published about literacy skills in the United States. She knew enough to also know questions to ask. So it was very important when we sat down to the table with a group of scholars, Alice very much wanted the scholars present who developed the National Assessment of Adult Literacy. So she had a deeper understanding of not only what the findings were, but how they went about to reach those findings, what the definitions were, how people were measuring this concept, and attentive to the fact that she wanted to know, would it be important to measure this information for oral health, or is there a broader umbrella that will fit oral health as well? So she brought the key players to the table. She asked the right questions. She pursued and enabled dialogue and discussion amongst and between people in public health, including people in oral public health, brought people to the table from the field of education, from the field of communication, and sat people down to engage in thoughtful dialogue and discussion, to be able to find a path and to travel together on that path, leading to insight and understanding. She wanted always to move beyond what was happening in whether it be the medical or dental or mental health encounter, the encounter of the one-on-one. She really always had the public health vision very much in mind. That yes, it's very important to be attentive to what happens when an individual is speaking to a health professional, but she also wanted to know what was happening when a health professional tried or wanted to speak to a community and work together in community to move an agenda forward, to move an issue forward. So the vision was not a myopic vision of the one-on-one encounter. It really was simultaneously respectful of the importance of the one-on-one encounter, but really wanting to engage the public health vision as well, and set of glasses that we wear in public health. It was very important that Alice was very attentive to dissemination of findings, whether it be the small initial findings of assessments of materials in oral health and whether or not they were comprehensible, or whether they were broader findings of a larger research agenda, always pressing colleagues to speak at conferences. The calls that I would get to Alice, and it was the joke in my family as far as my husband was concerned, Alice calls and you run. I said, well, Alice promised me she would never call me to the table unless it was important. It took me a long while to realize that every time Alice called, she said, this one is important. developing a research agenda, putting together a group of colleagues, putting together a table of people who were really eager to share ideas across the normal divides of our professional groups or professional associations to develop a broader research agenda was a real act of generosity. Alice did not come to the table with a hidden agenda, did not come to the table, as many people I know, and not for evil purposes, I don't mean to imply that for others, but people very often know what they want as the outcome of a meeting, know what the kind of agenda that they want others to come to. Alice didn't come to the table that way. There was an open book, there was an open set, and she was eager to hear, she was eager to listen. She did not have a prescribed agenda in mind before the discussion came up. And there's an intellectual generosity in that that I think is something that we need to be very attentive to. Supporting research studies. Alice was amongst others, and of course I'm standing next to a prime other right now, and there's another other in the back of the room, really did help the NIH begin to think in a broader way. We've long known that education is linked to health outcomes. We've long known that social economic status, of course, is linked to health outcomes. And the way we measure social economic status is generally just education and income. But we haven't taken the time until fairly recently to begin to deconstruct this notion of social economic status. We know that health is really, in a sense, determined by social factors, including education and income, that education and income travel together, they also travel separately. So that you're more likely, for example, to die of a chronic disease if you have less than a high school education. But we haven't taken the time to look at the pathways. What are the logical pathways? What explains why education is linked to health outcomes? And it's the illumination of those pathways that Alice was one of the prime movers to be able to help set a research agenda to enable researchers. By Cynthia, again, one of the prime movers in this area, to enable researchers to begin to tease out what is it, what are the pathways between education and health outcomes, and the fact that literacy may be one of those critical pathways is something that Alice grabbed hold of, pursued, supported, encouraged, and encouraged research in that area and helped develop the research call to action out of NIH. She therefore supported research studies. She analyzed and was part and parcel of analyzing system barriers and always attentive to the policy implications. So not satisfied with making changes in language, not satisfied with making changes in the encounter, not satisfied with making changes in the public health agenda, but indeed wanting to see a much broader policy change that would bring about healthful encounters, healthful dialogue and discussion on the individual and on the larger level of public health talking to people. So in addressing the oral health context, Alice is constantly promoting dialogue and constantly urging that we remove barriers. I just need to add a more personal note, again, because I'm new to the fan club. So of course I looked at Alice in Wonderland thinking, at first I must admit that I'll find things that would typify Alice, but what I saw, of course, were the contrasts. But there was another figure. There was another figure that I was really inspired by, and it was here when I looked at the Red Queen. Not that the Red Queen typifies Alice, but in a particular encounter, the Red Queen made me feel like the Alice in Wonderland, or the Alice through the looking glass. I don't know if you recall the scene, but Alice and the Red Queen are running. They're running across the chessboard, and Alice is absolutely, they're running very hard hand in hand. This is the famous woodcut. Alice is growing quickly out of breath, but she's continuing to run with the Red Queen, who's just calling out faster and faster, and Alice is near collapse. And Alice is finally, are we there yet? Are we there yet? This is me as Alice Horowitz, is pulling me along to yet the next meeting, the next agenda setting, the next article that we have to think about, the book that we still haven't done. And the Red Queen is yelling out faster and faster. Alice is completely exhausted. Finally, the Queen allows her to stop. They're resting a little bit. And Alice, to her absolute dismay, looks down and realizes that she's still at the same box, the same square on the chessboard. And she mentions that to the Queen, who is not at all dismayed. "Of course," said the Queen. "What would you have it?" "Well, in our country," said Alice, the me, panting a little, "you generally get to somewhere else if you run very fast for a long time, as we've been doing." "Slow sort of country," said the Queen. "Now here, you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you must run at least twice as fast as that." And my inability to keep up with this woman, dubbed for now the Red Queen, really put me in my place, and I realized that I was the Alice. Where have we been? Where should we go? I just want to highlight the white paper that came out that really is the beginning, the very beginning, and the call to action for people to come together and set a health literacy agenda in oral health. Thank you for your attention, and I've gone a bit beyond my time.